Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I was expecting it to look a bit shite. You don't.
Well, you're the first person to say that today.
Why, do you look bad?
Do I look what? Fat?
Like, no, bad. Do people keep commenting?
Oh, wow, people have just said, oh, you look terrible, and which is always nice to hear. Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I am your host, Connor Clancy. I'm joined by the usual two suspects. One of them's fixing himself, so I'll go to the other. Vito Doria is with me. Hello, Vito. How are you down in Australia?
Hello, Connor. I'm feeling probably the best I have been in quite a while. Later tonight, Australian time, we're out of lockdown, and for us it's a great relief, and just a shame that I'm hearing news that on the other side of the world things are flaring up again. So I'm hoping everyone in Europe can sort of pull through once again and fight off this pandemic as best as possible. But from a personal point of view, I think here in Victoria, and especially in Melbourne, I think there'll be a lot of relieved people.
Yeah, and from one extreme to the other, I suppose, because Kev Pogrzelski is feeling under the weather and appears to have symptoms. Kev, how are you feeling?
I'm okay. I'm here minus my sense of taste and smell, which is...
And you've brought a cough along with you as well, and a fever.
Yeah, I've had a high temperature. I've got a cough, which I'll try not to transmit on the pod too frequently.
Please.
But yeah, it's a strange one, the loss of sense of smell, and I suppose we have been doing it.
What's the situation then? Have you gone and had a COVID test?
I've gone and had a COVID test this evening, so in the next 24 hours I'll find out if I'm positive or whatever and having to quarantine. And a bit like when you're in your younger days, you've got to phone people up and tell them they've been infected and
I don't know what type of phone calls you have to make in your younger days, Kev, but not all of our listeners are the same. But I'm sure our listeners will join with us in keeping our fingers crossed for you that hopefully it's just a seasonal flu or something like that, or worst case scenario, you pull through everything and you'll be all right. So I suppose we're here to talk about the football, Kev, aren't we? Not about your health, unfortunately. As much as I would love to do that, and we will do that when we finish recording, there's been quite a lot of action in Serie A this weekend. The reason we're coming to you guys a little bit later than usual is because Lega Serie A, I mean, they put the biggest game of the weekend on a Monday night, so what do you expect us to do? Milan played Roma, Milan hosted Roma, and it finished 3-3. This trend of goals in Serie A continued this evening, and it was a bit of a chaotic game, Vito, wasn't it?
Oh, it certainly was. it was a game where we did have our share of goals, but it was certainly a controversial one. And I think that's largely due to the refereeing performance of Giacomelli. I remember a couple of years ago, Lazio fans went on to Google to criticize his cafe in Trieste after a poor refereeing performance against their team. And I think now, I think both sides, the Rossoneri more so in this game, can feel aggrieved that Giacomelli made some very poor decisions throughout this game.
Yeah, I'm looking at two stills from the images themselves, because when they happened, I kind of thought they're not penalties. The penalty that Roma were given first, Kev, which we should say happened in the 71st minute, and it was converted by Jordan Veretout to make it 2-2. Then Milan were given one 6 minutes later or so, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored it. But the one on Pedro, I can kind of see why that was given, but I don't think it was a penalty. The one for the foul by, I say foul, the coming together between Mancini and Calhanoglu, I cannot understand why that was given whatsoever. It was just two terrible decisions, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were two terrible decisions, and I think the first one that resulted in the Roma penalty, I'm convinced it's why the second one gets given. But what I found more unusual was that they didn't even go and consult the screens at the side of the pitch for the Pedro one. Almost as if the referee didn't want to even consider that he might have got it wrong. He seemed relatively happy to give it, you know, without kind of going and using the facilities available to him.
Our Alistair McKenzie described that second penalty decision as being one of the most blatant balancing out penalties you'll ever see. And he's got a point there, right? That second penalty is not given if the first one was.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you know, we talk about a lot of the time wasted on the use of VAR almost being as tedious as, you know, the marginal decisions. Yet here we are discussing the flip side of that, where the official hasn't bothered to use it whatsoever. When, you know, I'm not saying it would definitely have changed his mind, but we probably wouldn't be so scathing of him, at least if he showed willing to use the technology available.
Vito, I know you're someone who likes goals in games, but I tend to like them as well. But I couldn't help but think that this game was actually quite poor. A lot of people online seem to be saying how it was a great advert for Serie A. I thought the exact opposite. I felt that the goals came through incompetence more so than being crafted out.
Yeah, this time I have to agree. If we look at other games this season so far, that would be adverts for Italian football. I thought something like Inter's 4-3 win against Fiorentina would have fitted that more suitably. Whereas with this game, after finding out that Gianluigi Donnarumma contracted the coronavirus, or at least got a positive result, I just thought with the goalkeeping situation and Roma having had problems since Alisson left, to be honest, I thought something could go on here. And what we did witness was some poor goalkeeping. And Cyprian Tatarusanu, I think, had an absolutely shocking game. You'd think a goalkeeper with his height could be able to deal with those aerial balls. And I felt that... aside from Giacomelli's decision-making, I think Roma can be grateful that Tatarusanu played in goal instead of Donnarumma, because those corners should have been dealt with much better by the Rossoneri and by Tatarusanu specifically.
It's interesting we make the point about 3-3 and that you almost automatically expect it to be one of the, you know, the better games of either the weekend or maybe sometimes the season. But I think the actual excitement here comes from the poor decisions. Well, as I was watching this, because I was doing the player ratings, I think what drove it home to me how probably, not, I was going to use the term mediocre, just how flat this game was in a lot of places. There was so many players where very little to sort of highlight about their contribution to the game. Salamaca scores a goal, and I think on my player ratings, I've literally put, if he hadn't given Milan the lead for the second time in the game, you would have forgotten what else he contributed. And the one of the only other two games that I watched in full live over the weekend was the one that you were at, Connor, the Sassuolo-Torino. Mm. And after that, I know it was extremely difficult. We'll get onto the weather. But just those four goals in 9 minutes made you feel like, was this one of the best games I'd seen this year? And actually, it wasn't. And Milan-Roma tonight was a bit like that. You sort of just reflect on the scoreline, and actually, if you watched it back live, it was pretty bad.
I don't know, even because the Sassuolo ones, with the exception of probably Belotti for Torino's second, all of them were created and were forced through by genuinely good attacking play. Whereas tonight, it just seemed like they couldn't miss the chances. Like, the first goal that either side scored are two examples of the worst pieces of goalkeeping you'll see this season. And I don't think that's hyperbolic to say that. Both goalkeepers, Vito Maggi and Tatarusanu, but at the other end as well, Mirante, that was dreadful goalkeeping. And I don't know, maybe I'm being too negative, but so we'll move on to some positives, because Vito, Rafael Leao was actually quite impressive, and he is really, really, really coming along since being partnered by Ibrahimovic, I suppose, at Milan.
Well, if we're going to... Well, first, in generalities, I think on that left flank, AC Milan are looking quite strong now, because Ante Rebic hasn't featured recently, but Rafael Leao, whenever he's been on the left, he's actually been quite a threat. And in this particular game, I thought he was one of Milan's best, if not Milan's best player. He was involved in the first goal, and he was also involved in the second, so he's really growing in confidence. And he's a tall guy, but he's got a lot of pace on him, and he's a very competent dribbler. So he does add a bit of excitement to Milan's play too. So I'm really glad that he's starting to really settle in and also become decisive. It's easy for young players to dazzle and pull out a few tricks and all that, but if they can make a contribution to the score and become productive in that aspect, then I think it's great for the development as footballers as they get older.
Kev, I know I tried to get away from the negativity, but I kind of have to go back to it, because aside from Leao, there wasn't much. I mean, Calabria was okay in possession, maybe not so much without it, but was this a game that was played out between two teams that aren't as good as their early season form is suggesting?
I think you're going to have a bit of a dip. I think they can still, you know, reach higher levels than this. It was just rather pedestrian, and you wonder whether that's come from, you know, Milan have obviously had to go through some additional Europa League rounds. They're both coming back off of, did Roma travel away? I know Milan went to Celtic, but I can't now remember if Roma are away in midweek. So, you know, it's at the back end of a weekend, the Monday night fixture. So I'd like to think they can at least up their game from this, but whether we'll see Milan go on another run of four straight wins like they did at the start of the season remains to be seen.
Roma were away at Young Boys, but isn't that only in Switzerland, which is closer to Milan than Roma is? So I don't know what they did in the interim, but there you go. Okay, Vito, Milan have obviously been heavily praised, and to their credit, they have deserved the praise they've been receiving so far this season. But this game tonight, is that an example of them doing enough to pass what is one of their first bigger tests of the season? Or is it evidence that they can be got at and that they're a little bit vulnerable?
Well, it's very hard to assess, because I think, you know, without saying that it's all Giacomelli's fault, I think his refereeing performance tends to influence this particular result and how it really impacted. At the moment, I'm going to say that this was one of the decent tests which they managed to do all right in. And although it wasn't vintage Milan, I think it just felt like in some ways Giacomelli wasn't giving Milan enough, not so much protection, but I got that vibe that it was like he was against AC Milan. Sure, Roma got some calls against them, but I think if you could claim that he was favouring someone, I would say he was favouring Roma more than Milan. So at this stage, I'd say that this was a decent test for the Rossoneri. They managed to come up all right. They at least got a point, and we'll see what goes on from here on in. But I don't think they're going to start having a slump as yet. I think they'll still be around the top or at the top.
Don't say nice things to the Milan fans. But yeah, they're away at Udinese next up. They'll get 3 points there handily enough. And if not, I'll be rubbing my hands together. Then they've got Verona at home, followed by a trip to Naples on the 22nd of November, which is after the international break, I believe. That's going to be a tasty one because Napoli are second in Serie A. That was Milan's first game dropping points. Napoli didn't drop any points, although it looked like they might for a while in what was the Insigne derby. Roberto obviously scored the opener, then did the halftime interview on the pitch. My first goal of the season or something has come against Lorenzo, and then Lorenzo thought he had equalised, and I can't remember if it was disallowed or what, but then Lorenzo did equalise with an hour gone, and they both got their goals. They took a nice little photo for their mother on the pitch, and it was all very wholesome, Kev.
Yeah, I do feel like Napoli are trolling me after saying that they couldn't break into the top four this year, and they've been just sort of, because this is kind of one of those games where last season, when they were struggling at times, particularly at the start of the season before Gattuso came in, they would have probably just pulled a point out and not drawn the game. I know you could probably argue that Benevento will struggle for the majority of the season. But at times, they looked as though they had the better of Napoli in the first half. But it was very nice to see both brothers score. I'll admit, I was unaware until I watched a Serie A programme go out in the UK before the game that had Roberto being interviewed. And it was quite nice that he admitted that he was never going to be as good as Lorenzo, but would be doing his best to get a goal that would mean a lot to him, clearly.
I had seen Roberto Inglese play before. It was cool as well. I came to a Parma game, and when they were in Serie B, and he was on loan here from, I think it might have been Napoli, actually, before he went to Benevento, anyway. And they've got a third brother. I don't know if you saw this, but the third brother came out during the week, and he said, "Oh, I'm the really talented one. Those other two can't do anything." Just quite nice. It's like the Hazard family. They're all insanely talented footballers. I'm not sure what the third brother does, to be honest, but he's obviously not as good as Lorenzo and Roberto. But anyway, I was quite happy, actually, to see the man who got the winner get on the score sheet. It was big Andrea Batania. He's up and running, as he said in Napolitano dialect on his own Instagram. The bulldozer has returned, Vito.
It was a well-taken goal, and I think in that scenario in the second half, I think Gattuso definitely made the most of his subs. Victor Osimhen didn't have one of his best games, and even Dries Mertens wasn't looking quite flash. So to put on Matteo Politano and also Petagna, they both combined for the winning goal. And I think it's excellent for the Parteno pay if they can have someone come off the bench and do what Petagna did, because he's another big body, and he can help unsettle defenders. And I think also with the start Osimhen has had with Napoli, being able to draw out defenders and really create that presence in attack, Petagna too can add an extra dimension to the play. And one of the things we were not necessarily critical of, or probably just dismayed about, that especially during his Atalanta days, he wasn't scoring enough. He was doing well for the team, but he wasn't putting the ball in the back of the net. But he found his boots at Spal, and if he can keep scoring for Napoli, I think Gattuso can be very happy and positive that he's got good options coming off the bench.
Yeah, Spal are good for the soul. Spal just make everyone find their best, as I rediscovered this weekend. I obviously got to the Stadio Paolo Mazza for some Serie B on Saturday, which I might touch on a little bit later. But Kev, we discussed last week about the difficulty, if you could call it that, that Chucalizano and Insigne might have, or that they might present Gattuso trying to get them into the same team. But they both played and they won.
They did. I can't remember the positions, though. Did Insigne play more off of the right?
I think
Lozano was on the right. No, it was Lozano that did.
I think I was probably then getting caught
he didn't have a great game.
That Insigne came off of the right to score the goal, didn't he, after taking the corner?
Moment, yes. But in general, Insigne was more on the left and Lozano, he played on the right. But as I was saying earlier, he didn't have one of his best games. Hence why Politano came on, and Matteo Politano, he looked very bright coming off the bench.
He's been quite good, actually, in the last few weeks, and he's not someone we've given credit to. We've been drawn elsewhere with Osimhen and Lozano lighting it up, but I suppose Politano, he had it difficult at Inter. I mean, he didn't really work there, having shone with Sassuolo, but now Vito, Politano looks like he could play a really, really important role with the Partenope.
He does, and he's getting involved in goals as well. So he scored at least one. He's definitely scored against Atalanta, and then he's been involved in other goals. So I think now I wouldn't say he's back to his Sassuolo form, but he's pretty much close to it. And having Politano on the right, I think, really adds a bit more extra excitement to Napoli's playing. They've got a lot of flair players already, but with Kayohan, who was there for many years, he was a great worker, an effective player, but I wouldn't say he was a flair player, whereas Politano, he does provide a little bit more excitement on the ball, at least for me anyway. So I'm glad that he's finding his boots again. And as I was saying with someone on Twitter, I think the way things are, when it comes to right-wing options for the Italian national team, I probably would rather have someone like Politano on his current form than someone like Federico Chiesa, who has sort of been hot and cold with Fiorentina, and then even at Juve. Look, he's only had a couple of games with the Bianconeri, but I think Chiesa still needs to sort of find his feet and, most importantly, be far more productive.
Yeah, well, another option for that right-wing position is someone who played in a game we're going to go on to now. It's nice talking about them this early in the pod because I think they deserve it. Sassuolo, they drew 3-3 with Torino, and Domenico Berardi is the guy I'm talking about. Obviously, I don't know what he did in the first half because I literally couldn't see that far. I'm sure you both saw my Twitter feed on Friday evening.
It was hard enough watching it on TV. So if it was bad on TV, I mean, being there, I couldn't imagine it being that much easier to see it. And another thing that surprised me was the commentator, Andrew Pickering. I was surprised how he managed to identify the players as well as he did, because I sort of had to see things twice or even three times to see if he actually got his player identification right.
Yeah, I was actually meaning to speak to him because he messaged me when I tweeted that I was going there saying he was commentating on the game. I thought, well, good luck with that. Because when I was there, the cameras are only about 10 feet below the press stand at the Mapei, so you can see them. And we had the little monitors beside our seats. When the ball was down my end, so the end Sassuolo attacked in the second half, I could see it more clearly just by looking at the pitch than I could looking at the monitor. But when the ball was at the other end of the pitch, I couldn't see anything over the halfway line. You could see like silhouettes of the Torino players because their shirts were whiter than the fog. The Sassuolo players completely disappeared into the fog, and the ball did too. And it was just a complete nightmare. So I had to watch that on the screen. But even then, you're really just watching where the Torino players are to get an idea of where the ball is. It's like I've never experienced anything like that at a match before. And I kind of hope that I don't again. But when it comes to the football, I mean, it was scripted, because there was one goal in the first 70 minutes. And then there were five in 15, and there was a burst that there was two goals in 1 minute from Sassuolo late on, as they came from 3-1 behind again to escape with a point. But what I want to talk about with Sassuolo is something that I wrote about. It's those Italian boys. I mean, we did touch on it a couple of weeks back, but Ciccio Caputo, Domenico Berardi and Manuel Locatelli, they just keep staking a claim, Kev, to be in not only Roberto Mancini's Italy squad, but a real case for making the starting 11.
Yeah, I think it's not just in Italy where you've seen at some of the bigger sides in their respective countries rotate or don't give players enough game time, that it really sort of brings home those that are getting regular football and are shining sometimes maybe at a side that are just outside the European places in a league. And if you can get some players that are playing together at a club level, surely when you're meeting up at the moment, particularly when you're meeting up trying to sort of squeeze all these international games in, then it's better to get players that are familiar with each other and what they're doing if you're trying to qualify for a tournament or prepare for a tournament.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And particularly with that Berardi and Caputo partnership. I mean, Berardi is someone who we even bemoaned on this podcast for a long time, because he never found the consistency that we thought he should from his early days in his career. But since Caputo came in, Berardi's been elevated to another level. Caputo scored 27 goals in his season in Serie B, came up with Empoli, scored like 16 as they got relegated, moved to Sassuolo, scored 21 last season, and he's already on 5 this season. And since lockdown, nobody in Italy has scored more goals than him. He's got 13. Only Cristiano Ronaldo has as many. Actually, do you know what? Ibra got 2 tonight, so that might be close now. I wrote this on Saturday, so or Sunday, so I don't know. But in terms of Immobile, he hasn't always delivered. But Kev, you want to jump in on Caputo?
Well, yeah, just on players like Caputo and Berardi staying where he is at Sassuolo. And then you see the likes of someone like Chiesa or Bernardeschi. You know, you can roll several names off that have started out at lesser clubs, in inverted commas, and then moved somewhere else. And that lack of game time has really harmed their career, but also the national team, where you'd expect them to go on and flourish and become maybe a regular, if not within the first 11, but in the squad. And that's the benefit of these players, and these players must realise that's the benefit of staying at Sassuolo and getting minutes and showing what they can do regularly, week in, week out, in a, you know, probably a preferred position, other than being shoehorned into another huge Antonio Conte squad at Inter or anywhere else.
Might seem like a bit of a flippant point, but a joking point. I promise you it's not. But given the whole football being played behind closed doors again, now, even when there was only 1,000 fans in Sassuolo, it still applies. And the European Championship, if it goes ahead next summer, being played without fans or with very, very limited number of fans. So the fact that these players come from a background of playing for Sassuolo, where there isn't that fan pressure, that fan aggression, when they play at the Mappe, even pre-coronavirus, that there's not that same environment. It's very much relaxed in the stadium. It's mostly empty. Is that something that could actually be beneficial?
I think it's possible, and I think it's makes sense to see things in that way. The fact that they play for Sassuolo, which doesn't have a huge fan base, even before the pandemic came about, and playing at a club where there isn't that much expectation to win trophies or be near the very top of Italian football, that might benefit them, because they don't have much to lose, or they don't have to stress too much. So, you know, if they're not, if the Euros do go ahead, and there are going to be limited crowds or no crowds at all, then they're still able to play the natural game without being, you know, exposed to any sort of noises in the crowd. If anything, any criticism would be just in print media or social media. It won't be at the crowds, you know, with fans just heckling them.
Absolutely right. On to you, Juve. Right. Start with the kits, shall we? Because I know Kev's going to look at him. Look at him. I know listeners, you can't see him, but you can picture what he looks like right now. I'm not going to finish that sentence, but Juve were wearing their special human race kit, which, do you know what? I'm a big, big fan of. Not a fan of them wearing it in a home game, mind, but Juve wearing that kit wasn't in Turin, was it? It was in Turin. Was it? Where was Juve, Verona?
It was in Turin.
Yeah, it was, yeah. So this is what happens when teams wear away kits at home. But I'm not a fan of them wearing it at home, but I loved what they did with that kit. And personally, when it comes to Pharrell, I like his designs of things. I think he's quite interesting. But Kev, do you want to go?
Well, yeah, firstly, they shouldn't have been wearing it at home. You know, I think we all agree there is never any need to toss your tradition aside and wear an away strip. I was previously unaware that any strip had been designed for the human race. Apparently, I don't know how much Pharrell doesn't like us as a human race. What can we call it? Can we call it a scribbled shirt?
Yeah, well, it was the away shirt that they wore about 5 years ago. So the concept is Pharrell has been taking designs of Adidas clubs that, I don't know, he likes, I guess, and just doing a... It's as if a child drew it, right? Like, that's what it looks like, because the crest isn't clear. It's like, it is scribbled, like with a crayon type look.
It looks good. I'm not sure I'm convinced that these are clubs that Pharrell liked, you know. As a little 5, 6, 7 year old, he was there, you know, watching.
I'm not saying he likes the clubs. I'm saying they gave him a back catalogue of their old kits and he picked the kit that he looked.
I think he likes working with a certain sportswear manufacturer.
Yeah.
I was previously unaware of it. The commentator mentioned it, so then it sort of drew it to my attention. I looked at it and I thought, oh my word, what? And I paused the screen. And then I sort of turned to the wife. Everybody knows the wife. And I said,
call her by her name. Come on.
Okay,
we Stace. We know her now.
yeah, everybody knows Stace, my wife. Turned it to her. I said, look at the state of that. And she went, oh, that's not too bad. I went, that's not a moving picture that has been paused fuzzy. And then I can only describe her noise as, oh. And she shared my concern over the general scribble design. I'll leave my elderly rantings there for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, the whole colour scheme they had with the pink and stuff, those were Juventus's original colours when they formed in 1897. They only became the Bianconeri until 1903 when someone bought some Notts County kits from the UK. So it is a bit of a throwback to the history. But I'll be honest, with that whole design by Pharrell, I'm sure it's meant to be some symbolic in its own way, and I don't want to take anything away from that. But when I look at the drawing or the design of the jersey for what it is, to me, it actually reminds me of watercoloring. So I'm not sure what the incentive is around that or what the connection is, but yeah, it's a bit unconventional to have that sort of look if we're just going to look at it from a design perspective. The whole watercoloring thing, is that going to be like a one-off, or are we going to be seeing it more in the future? It just, it's not what I'm used to.
I'm pretty sure the idea of it is, like, I know the kits are created from all recycled materials and stuff like that. And yeah, there's a lot of meaning behind it that you probably should look up and read into yourself. I've not done it myself, but yeah, Pharrell's a fashion designer. So if you're getting a fashion designer to design football shirts, it's what you get. I quite like them. I didn't know they were actually going to be worn when I first saw them, and I was kind of drooling over them because there was one for Manchester United, there was one for Bayern Munich. Did he do an Arsenal one as well, I think? And they all looked pretty good. Well, in my eyes anyway, but didn't know they were going to wear them in a game. But I don't know, I'm standing by it. I like them. I've always had a soft spot for pink kits as well, so maybe I'm biased in that way that there's a pink kit and Pharrell's involved, so it's always going to get two thumbs up from me. So there you go. But I mean, in terms of the football, before we actually talk about this game, I should give a little teaser that if you're listening to this, I'm guessing you like our podcast. So we've got an extra bonus podcast coming during this week. I spoke to the author of a book about Juventus, Herbie Sykes. He's written a book called Juve, 100 Years of an Italian Football Dynasty. It's quite a big book as well. And we will be giving away one of these in a competition during the week on our social media channel. So keep an eye out for that if you're a Juve fan or not. If you're not, it's not just a glowing love story about Juventus. He does talk about the murkier side of things as well. And if you like Juve, he also talks about the nice things. Look, there's a big number 10 on the back. He loves Del Piero and stuff. He's lived in Turin for about 20 years. Had quite an interesting chat with him about Juve, the history, their impact on Turin, Calabria, everything. So have a listen to that. Keep an eye out for the competition and you could win a copy of that book. Anyway, onto the game. Juve look pretty rubbish, Kev. And it took Dejan Kulusevski to come off the bench to save them and get them a point.
Yeah, a lot like Crotone last week. You would probably say the same midweek against Dynamo Kiev, although Kiev were an extremely determined and well-drilled side that Juve had to break down. But it all just feels a little flat. We can give some allowances for the fact that Pirlo's only just come into the job. But with the way Milan have started...
Can we, though? Can we give allowances for that? Because they appointed him with no coaching experience. So normally if a coach comes in, I'm fair enough to cut those allowances, but they hired a coach who'd never taken a training session before.
Well, I don't think that's Pirlo's. I don't think we should hold that against Pirlo, but we should allow him time to get his views across. I have bigger issues around somebody like that being able to walk just straight into one of the biggest jobs in arguably European football. I know he's done his coaching badges and things, and they're still within touching distance. I think if you were to tell them that they'd have a novice manager and be 4 points off of the top of Serie A and still clearly be able to improve once they do hit the ground running. Nobody would be too concerned. And probably, as we touched upon before, this could be the ideal year to bed in a new coach and still probably win the league. Although I hope to see a bit more of a title race amongst maybe more than even two sides this season.
It's going to be the top six. Milan, Napoli, Sassuolo, Inter, Juve, Atalanta are gunning for the title this season. One of them will miss out on Europe because Samp will win the Coppa Italia. And it's just going to be mad. It's going to be a great, fun season. Stop talking about Juve, yeah? I think that's fair enough. All right, let's move on. Vito, come on. We'll get there. The FIF Pod Derby took place the first of the season in Bergamo, where Sampdoria went and Sampdoria whooped Atalanta 3-1. Vito, you must have been beside yourself with happiness after this.
Yeah, oh, look, I was. Not only was I surprised that Sampdoria managed to get the win against Atalanta, but the fact that the Doriani were able to do it in Bergamo. So I think that's an incredible result. Before I start praising Samp's performance, I think we need to point out that Gasparini did not use his first choice wing backs. Hatabo and Gosens did not start the game. Freuler did not feature in this game. So I think we're starting to really see from this game and last week's game that Freuler leaves a big hole in the Atalanta midfield when he's not there. And Palomino's still starting. So I think, he's once again showing he's a liability.
Leave him alone. Leave him alone, Vito. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But look, we've been saying about Freuler on the pod for years as well. But Kev, what's that I'm seeing on the score sheet for the first goal? It's Fabio Quagliarella. Well, we got another one.
You've just mentioned if Palomino had actually gone to close him down as opposed to joining two other defenders dragged into the person that provided the assist. Apologies, I can't remember who. And there you go.
Kev,
there's still time.
If Palomino had closed them down, he would have scored twice. That's what Palomino does.
Yeah. he probably would have just skipped in then onto his more favoured right foot. But And it was only Sportiello to beat. So maybe it's a conspiracy to get Quagliarella to 15 goals before Christmas.
Yeah, I've had a word with the boys in Bergamo. I said, lads, do me a favour.
I meant the whole of Serie A.
That's 13, isn't it? 13, you're buying me dinner. 12, I'm buying you dinner. You've lost.
You're I'm resigned to the fact that I'm buying dinner, but...
Good. It was a silly bet. But look, we kind of just need to move swiftly on. Inter went to Genoa and they won 2-0. We had Dov there. We've not got audio from him, but kind of a throwback weekend for FIF at the games. I mean, I was at a game on Friday. I was at a game on Saturday. Dov was at a game on Saturday. I was at a game on Sunday. Ben was at a game on Sunday. And Dov was at a game on Sunday. It was six games in the weekend. We did very well, but onto that one, Genoa-Inter, 2-0 to Inter. Big Rom Lukaku, that's better. And Danilo D'Ambrosio got the goals. Vito, Genoa had one shot on target. No, they didn't. They had one shot, none on target, and 39% possession. What were they doing?
Oh, look, I did the Inter ratings for that game, and in general, it was a terrible game as a spectacle. Inter weren't at their best, but Genoa just looked happy to stay parked in their own half. They offered nothing as a counter-attacking threat. And I think once Nicolò Barella came on, I think that's when we really started to see something from this game. He made a difference. He was involved in Lukaku's goal. And for the second one, it's incredible to think that Andrea Ranocchia got the assist for D'Ambrosio's goal. That was unbelievable. After that Brozovic corner, it was Ranocchia with the flick of the head. And, they got the 2-0 win, so that's good for their ambitions. And next week is the Derby della Lanterna. after the first round, I thought, gee, maybe Genoa actually was probably, it's probably been, was probably the first time since Gasparini's first spell at Genoa, I thought, oh, Genoa might actually have a chance of winning the derby. But 1 month later, it's like things are getting back to normal. You know, I fancy some chances of getting the city bragging rights again.
Just don't you be forgetting what happened last time you met in the derby, Vito.
Yeah, unfortunately, we lost. Yeah.
I have to say, I looked at this Inter team and the first thing that jumped out at me was Kolarov's not playing. Amazing. Conte's come to the realisation. And then I said, oh no, Ranocchia's there. Ranocchia, who actually was on the verge of joining Genoa this transfer window. And it was only on deadline day that Conte said, please stay. And he ended up staying, which is just one of the more bizarre transfer stories you'll hear. Lautaro Martinez had a bit of a, what can you call it? I don't know what you can call it. He wasn't happy anyway, was he, when he came off the off and had to sit on the bench, Kev? He has since apologised for his reaction, but there are also whispers from inside his camp that he's starting to get worried that he hasn't scored for a while.
Well, wasn't there something post-game Conte saying that both Lukaku and Martinez can still improve how they're playing already this season? When you consider some of the goals that Lukaku has contributed already, maybe it's because he doesn't want to necessarily point just the finger.
That's at Martinez. It, though, isn't it?
Yeah, blame the partnership rather than one individual. I'd hate to think that his nose has been put out of joint a little bit by all the transfer rumours last year. It did seem to affect his performances. Whether he wants to try and get away. Obviously, the rumours were all centred around Barcelona last season, and they are clearly having something of a restructure there. Not that they've got the money, I would argue, to purchase Martinez. But hopefully you just think that he'll pull his finger out and maybe get a goal, and that will start a bit of a run, and he'll be off and running again.
You would hope so, because he's genuinely a very, very exciting player when he gets going. But yeah, I think it very much was a case of Conte digging out Lukaku so that Martinez didn't throw the dummy out even more. Like when Ferguson used to want to go mad at Nani, he'd instead go mad at Rooney for something that Nani had done. So Nani would get the message. I kind of got the impression it was one of those. But there you go. Inter, 3 more points in the bag. We'll talk about them more in future weeks. The third game that I was at this weekend was Parma. They came from 2-0 behind to draw 2-2 with Spezia. And, right, this is going to sound ridiculous because Spezia hit the post 3 times and Spezia should have scored 5 goals, but Parma should have been out of sight. It was one of the most wasteful performances I've ever seen from a team, and no wonder that man Gervinho was at the heart of it. I don't know if either of you guys saw anything from this game, but my goodness.
Yeah, I can't remember how much of the end of the game I saw, maybe 20-25 minutes, and I was a little bit surprised to see them behind. But from what you're saying, it did feel, for everything that I watched towards the end of the game, it felt like because they were always in control, that maybe an equaliser was coming, just because it was such a narrow margin that Spezia had over them. But they certainly had a lot of possession and were controlling the game.
Yeah, the goals they conceded as well, it was basically a 3-minute window in the first half where Spezia got 2 goals ahead. Parma just momentarily collapsed. Spezia did have their chances, but it was very much Parma's points lost. The scoreline doesn't really reflect, nor does the order that the goals came in reflect what actually happened in the game. But Liverani again, starting to fear for him a little bit. Like, I mean, he has frustrated me, and I'm not a Parma fan, but the decisions he's making is what I wrote about for this morning's piece. It's just, he's not playing players who should play. He's playing players who shouldn't. And the players who are rightfully selected are getting played out of position. And nobody knows what's going on at the moment. And quite telling after the match that when the final whistle went, no one was happy, despite the fact that they had just scored a stoppage time equaliser. It was just a bit of a silence, and I think everybody knew their next three Serie A games got Inter, Fiorentina and Roma, and then they make a trip to play Genoa away on the 30th of November, and you can't see Parma picking up too many points from those three games, and if that's the case, you find it hard to see Liverani still in the job come the end of November, bearing in mind he was employed by the previous ownership structure. So since he's been employed, they've got new owners in, new sporting. No, the sporting director hired him, but the owners didn't. So you fear for him. But we've spoken about Parma a lot, so we're not going to do that too much today. Fiorentina beat Udinese 3-2. A lot of FIF listeners will be happy to see that. I know we've got a lot of Fiorentina fans and Udinese haters amongst us. But Gaetano Castrovilli, Vito, credit where it's due. We don't always praise him, but he deserves it this week.
Oh, clear man in the match. Scored two goals, and he set up the goal for Nikola Milenkovic. So it's the kind of performance that he needs. I'd personally love to see more of that from him because he is an exciting midfielder to watch. And again, about the Italian national team, he's another excellent midfield option. So even if he can't break into that trio that's already got Marco Verratti, Nicolò Barella and Jorginho, I mean, he's another player that can at least come off the bench. And if he can influence games like this, I think it's a big plus for the Viola as the season progresses. And like I said, just with the national team, if Mancini can have him as an impact sub, I think he can be a wonderful player.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely has a role to play in that. It's already set up. Him playing with Berardi and some of those other players with Locatelli behind Chicho Caputo, oh, would be beautiful to see. It really, really would. Insigne out on the left as well, obviously. But we'll move on. We'll move on. Lazio beat Bologna. We're not going to talk about it, though. Sorry, Lazio fans. Cagliari beat Crotone 4-2. Ben Hughes was at that game, his first game back for FIF at the game of the season. And he was very, very happy because he wanted to write about João Pedro. And João Pedro, before the game, was two games off becoming Cagliari's greatest ever goal scorer, bearing in mind that club's history as well, particularly with strikers. That's not a bad feat. He got one, so he's their second greatest ever goal scorer. And he's going to take that mantle. So head over to FIF, ForzaItalianFootball.com, and read Ben Hughes' piece from the Sardegna Arena on that. But we, guys, can we talk about Spal?
Well, since you went to the game in Ferrara, I think it's fair to let you talk about the latest result in Serie B.
Do you know what? I really love the place. I really, really just love going to Ferrara. It's such a good place to watch football. The people are amazing. The club are lovely. Stadium's nice. City's beautiful. And I don't know, because it was the last place I went before lockdown as well for Spal Juve, which was a great game. And this was my first time back in Ferrara since, so it was quite nice. Although now it was the last game, was that with fans? No, but that anyway, it would have been quite weird if that was the case. But it was good. Spal look like they've got everything they need to come back up. It just seems to be a matter of them needing to find confidence. That was their first win of the season. They had flashes where they were excellent, but then other flashes where they couldn't string a pass together, and that basically was determined by whether the fans were on their back or not. Now, without fans, it might play into their hands, but when the fans there are on side, I mean, they're some of the best in Italy, even with just 1,000 people. The atmosphere was amazing. Like, they're the first club that I've seen actually get a chant going with the restrictions and the social distancing and just the 1,000 fans in. But really good place, really nice club. Let's get back on the Spal train. I know when they were in Serie B before they came up to Serie A, we were kind of championing for them to come up. So it was nice when they did, and then we got to go there a few times. So come back soon, Spal. Sebastiano Esposito, though, was very bad. I'm sorry to say. I know, like, a lot of people want to see him do good, but they're technically quite clearly better than most of the players on the pitch, but his positioning was horrendous. He kept calling for the ball and just not being in the right place. and his teammates probably waiting for him to make a run. Yeah, I saw Gazzetta gave him a 5.5, which I thought was generous because that's kind of their standard. That's just average, not good nor bad. I would have gone 4.5 personally, 5 at a push. But yeah, he was poor, really, really poor. But anyway, we'll finish talking about that. Hopefully get the spot a few more times this season. Guys, you ready?
We still playing the game?
Of course we are.
And are you bringing a timer?
Oh. Right, yeah. So thank you for the timer reminder. What are we saying? How much time are we setting aside for this game?
60 seconds or 120?
For the game.
Seconds. Yeah.
You think...
Vito liked it as much as I did.
I don't know.
2 minutes I'm winning every week.
We'll as go long as it's not 5 minutes. I'll just say that.
3.5 minutes.
Okay.
Right. Who won last week? I won last week.
Yes, you did.
Right. So I'm going to have to... I've got a pen lid in my hand. You won the week before, Kev, so you can choose the hand, and if you get the pen lid, then you go first. My left hand or my right hand?
Your left hand, Connor.
Okay, you got the pen lid, so you can go first. All right, let's get this over with, shall we? The time starts when you start asking the first question. Don't do it.
Is it Bruno Alves?
It's not Bruno Alves. Over to you, Vito.
Okay. Is this player Italian?
He's not Italian. No. Back to you, Kev.
Do they play in the north of Italy?
They do not play in the north of Italy, Vito.
Okay. Is this club from the south of Rome?
The south of Rome?
Like, yeah, south
within
of
the south. So the city of Rome, but the south of it.
Yeah. No. I mean, just yeah.
They're a southern Rome Italian club.
All right, let me rephrase that. Is it?
No, they're Rome a southern or... Italian club. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Fine. Okay. All right. Is this player from Napoli then?
Nope.
Are they from Benevento?
Yes. Right. Come on. You've got 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
Is it Roberto Insigne?
It's not Roberto Insigne. That would have been too obvious, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's a non-Italian, so okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. Position-wise, is this player a midfielder?
He's not a midfielder.
God. I can't even think. I'm not,
You might not know about him. Like, you'll know of him, but you might not know that he's there.
Is it a goalkeeper?
No, it's not a goalkeeper.
All right. Is it Kamil Glick?
Yeah, it's Kamil Glick. There you go.
I did know. Yes. Because somebody asked me about him, and I thought he was still at Monaco.
There you go. So that's right. Kind of.
Yeah. Well, through me was... We decided last week that we were having North, South, or Central Italy.
Yeah.
Vito froze out south of Rome.
No, because it was the wording of the question that made it seem like he meant, like, is he from the south of Rome? Like, a little fucking quartiere in the south of the city. So,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No, because you said last week, you know... We're sort of divided that way because, yeah, based on the maps that I learned growing up, as I was explaining, anything from what I learned was anything above Tuscany and Marche was north and anything below Lazio and Abruzzo was south. So that's how I looked at it. Yeah.
The scores are Vito 2, Kev 2, Connor 1. It's absolutely scandalous that I even have a point. These are still a disgrace for letting I get to this point. But, before we wrap up, listeners, I will just give you another reminder to recheck your podcast feed during this week because we will have that extra pod going up. It's probably going to be about a 30-minute long conversation. It was about that anyway, and it's a really good chat. If you like Juventus or don't like Juventus, it's worth listening to because you'll get a bit of both, I think. Anyway, and it's not me hating on Juve. I just asked the questions. Remember that. this guy knows everything about the club, so don't at me. Kev, say goodbye.
Ciao, ciao, everybody.
Vito, say ciao.
Ciao.
And it's goodbye from me. Speak to you soon. Spa, 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 magica spa.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.